been here, we've been looking at the topic of work in the Bible. And here's the thing, even though we've seen that work is a huge blessing, like we saw that in Scripture, we learned that God is a worker, and you and I were made in His image, which means it's part of us that's just programmed to create and sustain whatever it looks like, from pie to jobs. Here's the fact, though, with work comes obstacles. Like, look around this room for a minute. Everybody's different. There's a lot of different sorts of folks in here. But we've got at least one thing in common. Your work, whatever it is, comes with obstacles and challenges. Like, I'll visit some of our shut-ins, and some of the biggest frustration in the lives of some of our elderly people is the work that you do dealing with doctors and appointments and insurance and all the things that can go wrong. You hit obstacles. Where I'll talk to younger people, some of you find yourselves at the bottom of the food chain in the service industry or in retail, and you find yourself up against managers or miscommunication. You've got obstacles. Some of you are parents of young kids, and that is work. Like, have you ever noticed? I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just us. But as soon as you got something big on your calendar, the kids get sick. Like, I don't know how my kids are so organized, but they like look at the calendar and go, okay, here's something really big coming up. Let's think about the incubation period, because that's a thing. And then they figure out the exact right moment to lick the floors at McDonald's with enough time to get sick when it's really inconvenient. Your work has obstacles too. Or maybe your main work looks like a career and you've got problems too. Clients, employees, you've probably got really big stories to tell. It seems like if something can go wrong, it does. And we started off the service with a poem. It was from Paul David Tripp, about looking around and seeing a broken down house. Here's a fact of life. Your workplace might look like a broken down house. It's not that hard to see it. If you look around, you can't avoid it. All sorts of obstacles and problems that come up. Sometimes it's personal problems or interpersonal problems. There's incidents. There's systemic obstacles. I mean, Murphy gets a law, and it's not a good law. Like, and I think sometimes you ask why, like, God, why do so many just bad things happen? God, why do traffic jams happen at the most inconvenient times? Why is the longest hold music always the worst music? How come the computer always crashes when, like, I'm into playing the piano? I don't understand why, but at the end of the day, I don't really matter today about the why as much as the what. Like, if I'm in a leaky house, like, I want to know how to stop it from leaking. I don't really care why it happened. I want to know, what do I do to fix this thing? And let's be honest. Let's just be real for a second. Honestly, obstacles might be unavoidable, but they're also something else. Obstacles are always an opportunity for something else to happen. And what normally happens? You hit an obstacle. What normally happens next? Well, here's what normally happens. Obstacles often lead you to do something. And often it leads you to compromise. Like, this is what we naturally do, right? We all do something. And part of being human means that we've got a natural default drive. We got a rut we go down, and it's to do the exact wrong thing. Let me tell you just a silly story, right? Here I am. I'm driving to Monroe the other day. And there was, of course, construction. And so there's traffic, and there I was, just thrilled about it, because I was adding 20 minutes to my drive, 20 minutes I just didn't have to play with. And up ahead, like, there's this, I mean, you know how merging works, right? There's three lanes, these two are merging, there's an exit lane that's straight and it's clear, and then there's two lanes here, and we're all trying to go down to one lane. So, like, for 15 minutes, I am doing the patient, slow merge dance. Do you all know the rules of the merge? Sometimes I think I'm the only one. Basically, I think it goes take turns, every other car, basically, right? No one else knows these rules, so you'll all know exactly what happens next, right? Traffic, is a broken down house. Here I am taking my turn all the way through the merging traffic, and I'm right about where the exit lane exits, and it's one lane here. And then you all are going to look shocked. There's a big SUV with a green Jesus fish on it, speeds down the exit lane, and I can see him in my mirror, right, going all the way down, but to everybody's shock, rather than exiting, cuts me off and avoids the entire traffic jam. And I know it's a silly thing to get upset about. Around here we call that driving. But I was a little upset. I was tired. I was in a bad mood. And I couldn't help it. That obstacle caused something in me. And what I did was subtle. Like, don't get your hopes up. This is not this is a really boring road rage story. Like, I didn't have a baseball bat going on or anything. But something happened right here in my heart. I did something. I reacted. And I became angry and bitter. And I know it seems silly, but I spent enough time in the city of Philadelphia to know where my horn is. And I've learned the vocabulary for expressing some of that. And this, again, a silly example, because stuff like this happens lots of times every day to most of us. And that's kind of the point. It affected the emotional trajectory of the rest of my day. No matter how minute this silly obstacle seemed, it affected how I treat other people later. Like, here's the thing. You can't avoid this simple fact. All of us, every day, face big and small obstacles. And every time you face a challenge, you will react to it. Most of the time, we don't even think about it. And if we don't really work hard at fighting it, do you know what obstacles do to us over the long term? They, in sometimes small ways, lead us to a place where we don't want to go. They lead us to compromise. We're like, I know what I should do, and I'm not doing it. We look around, and we see a broken down house, and it brings out the brokenness in all of us. That's what can happen. We all know what to do. We know what we should do. But most of us, because we don't really resolve to do something different, we become a slave to reactions that we almost can't help ourselves. And most of the time, look, our natural reactions don't make things better. Most of the time, it makes things worse. But what if there is something else to do? Like, here's the question I want to talk about today, because I'm convinced that if we could change how we reacted to obstacles, it might change where we end up. Today we're going to look at a godly character in the Bible who encountered some massive obstacles at work. The thing is, he did something different than what most of us do. Let's just see if God has a different path for us to go down. Here's a story I want to tell. This is a big obstacle. It's not about something silly like traffic or getting put on hold or something. This is something about something really, really dramatic. Probably, hopefully, something bigger than anything you have to deal with. This is a story about a kid named Daniel who was kidnapped from his home. And he was taken to a foreign city and given a job. And like every workplace story, you've got to know the details. Here's the details. The ancient Babylonians had this really successful empire-building strategy. Here's what they did. They found a smaller country, and they'd fight the war. They would destroy them. They would just wipe out the armies. They would do barbaric things that I just don't want to talk about in church. But if you can imagine it, they probably did it. But they had a set of values. Might is right. The end justifies the means, so they did just that, flexing their muscles, saying, we are not to be messed with. So they'd come in, they'd kill the army, they'd destroy most of the government, they'd drop off refugees in the defeated land, like sort of, we destroyed everything, now set up a homeless shelter. And then they'd take all the able-bodied adults as slaves or soldiers, and they'd find some fit young people with potential. And they would literally kidnap these young people. They'd take them back to Babylon to train them and use them as future government officials. Like, picture how, like, messed up this was. You're now a defeated colony, right? So obey these people because they're really violent and they have your kids. And your kids are the ones making decisions about how much of the crops they're going to take. But one of those kidnapped kids was someone named Daniel. And they should have given him treatment for PTSD because he saw some stuff. But instead they gave the guy a job. Like, think about just how messed up this was. Here's a broken, traumatized, God-fearing kid. He went to Sunday school, so to speak. He grew up believing in God's law. So here's a kid who believes that he's got values, that he's supposed to love God. Not that the end justifies the means, but God is right. So his values look like loving their neighbors. And because he's grateful what God's done, he's been taught to act ethically, to tell the truth, to promote justice, respect others. I mean, these are Daniel's values, and he hits an obstacle. Now he is working for an empire with a very, very different set of goals and values. And if you remember, God's value for the Old Testament people was, I mean, if you read Abraham, his mission was to be a light and blessing to the nations, right? To bless everybody. Now, Daniel's new mission is to destroy and take over nations. Like, this is a story set up for differences of opinion and conflict about really big stuff. And Daniel is a almost impossible spot. Might is right or honor God. Like, what is he going to do? There's a conflict. And the first of many obstacles that Daniel was in, the first one that we hear about, it almost seems silly. Almost as silly as a traffic jam. But here it is. It's mealtime. Daniel, welcome to training. Here's your name tag. Grab something to eat. We're going to get started soon. He had a big problem right there. Because before Jesus came, some of the laws that he would have been taught, some of his values had to do with mealtime and what he ate. So there they are, and they're serving. And I'm just guessing here, right? Egg McMuffins. I could be wrong. Tiny problem, though. And this is like comparatively seems like a really tiny obstacle compared to what Daniel's already seen. Like, here's Daniel, or here's Babylon. They go, hey, Daniel, we're killing your friends and your family. And oh, here's a delicious egg, ham, and cheese, or possibly sausage sandwich. Have it our way. You almost hear them saying that. And, you know what most of us would do? I'll be honest, you know what I would do? I'll just speak for myself. I think I would see that obstacle. And you know what I would do? I'm going to be honest here. I would probably compromise at that point. I'd probably go, look, I'm not murdering anybody. I'm just eating a delicious meal that seems like an easy compromise. But Daniel did something extraordinary. And this is fascinating. Let me just read this part of the story. And this is only a couple verses. I mean, it's worth going back this afternoon and reading this. This is verse 8 of Daniel chapter 1. Daniel resolved not to defile himself. In other words, Daniel hit an obstacle. And it would have been really easy to compromise. But Daniel refused. He resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. Now, God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel. Like, this is, like, think about what's going on here. This is a tiny, tiny thing, but it becomes a big deal in life. Like, think about what's happening here. This is an obstacle that easily could have led to compromise. And it seems small. Cut a small corner, make a small ethical adjustment. It's not a big deal. But instead of this compromise, or this obstacle leading Daniel to compromise, Daniel did something different. He resolved that the obstacle would lead him to character. And this story is amazing. This tiny story goes off in a chain reaction. Long story short, Daniel's boss likes him, but he's in a tough spot. If Daniel's boss allows this exception, he'll show weakness and lose respect. But I mean, bigger than that, if any of these guys look unhealthy, or if it looks like the program is not building these guys into leaders, the supervisor's in trouble. Like, and this is a big fact about life. Not compromising is often costly and risky. Let me just dive into the drama here quick. This is verse 10. So the official tells Daniel, I am afraid of my lord the king who has assigned your food and drink. Like, I didn't pick at the menu. Nebuchadnezzar did. Why should he see you look worse than the other young men your age? The king would have my head because of you, which is not hyperbole here. Like, his life was at stake if his trainee looked unhealthy because of this change. I mean, and here's the thing about, well, your obstacles. Character is often a high risk, low reward resolve to make. Compromise is always easier. Let's keep going, though. So here's the story. So Daniel tells the guard who the chief official appointed over Daniel and his friends, let's just do this. He says, please test your servant for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. And then he says, you be the judge. Compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food and treat your servants according to what you see. So we agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. This is amazing. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. You see what's going on here, right? You could chase this down later. Daniel proposes a trial run, one where everybody wins. He makes sure the boss is okay, and he makes sure that he could have his values without compromise. And at the end of 10 days, this is amazing, Daniel and his friends look like observably better than everybody else. And I won't read the rest of it, but by the end of the three-year training program, Daniel and his friends are at the top of the class. And the king, who, like, you know, the guard was afraid would cut his head off, said, these guys are, he says, 10 times better than everybody else. And finally, he was interviewed by the emperor, and Nebuchadnezzar basically asks, what is it with you guys? Like, and you can read it. You guys are 10 times sharper than anybody else in the program. And Daniel's like, to paraphrase, what is it with these guys? We didn't compromise when we hit an obstacle. To paraphrase, you can read it later. And Daniel's resolve not to compromise led to success. And let me just be clear about this. This is a minute point, maybe. People, you could buy books about the Daniel diet and say, you know, the story of Daniel is about the virtues of vegetables. And if you eat vegetables for 10 days, you'll be smarter and better looking. I don't really know about those books. I don't think dieting is a point of the story. To be fair, though, I'm not about to try. Like, just eating vegetables and water for 10 days. So who knows? Maybe it would happen. It's not something I'm going to risk. But this story has a very different point. The point of the story is that God often blesses people who follow him at personal risk without compromising. And when you face an obstacle, rather than it being a road to compromise, what we learn from Daniel is that obstacles should lead us to resolve to character. I'm not going to tell the whole story about Daniel, but Daniel chapter 1 ends with this verse, and Daniel was there until the first year of King Cyrus, which if you do the math, it was about 60 years later. Like, Daniel, this kid, with everything working against him, with so many obstacles, had a 60-year career in government, where he had impeccable personal integrity and remarkable success. You, like, read in chapter 6, like, Daniel is, people are jealous of Daniel, and the people can literally not think of any plausible gossip to make up about the guy. It's extraordinary. He's in government. And even people who don't like Daniel are like, you know, no one's going to believe any lies we make up about this guy Because he didn't even like eat bacon when he wasn't supposed to. You think he's going to do anything else? they couldn't accuse him of anything and have anyone believe it. This is an extraordinary story. This is not normal. Do you know what normal is? Look at the headlines. Normal looks like the headlines you see today. Now, all the stories sound like this. Person X in whatever hidden obstacle, they didn't have enough. Not enough money, not enough sex, not enough power. They hit a challenge, and you know, to hear their story, they couldn't help it. They compromised their values because they hit an obstacle to their shame. And read the interviews with someone who just gotten outed or publicly shamed or whatever scandal it is, and usually they say something like this: I hit an obstacle, and compromise didn't seem like a big deal. And sometimes it is. And even when it's not, the path that you go down, creating a neural pathway, a habit, a rut, it leads you to somewhere where you don't want to go. But God has a different way. And this is extraordinary. God's path can protect you and people around you from this sort of hardship. Think about this for a second. What if the obstacles that you came up in your life, what if the brokenness in your broken down house, so to speak, what if all of that could build your character muscles? I mean, this is what happens in Daniel's story, right? It in the end looked like God profoundly, not just building character for Daniel, but profoundly building a successful life for Daniel. And like Daniel being huge and strong and big started in a really small, weak place with him deciding not to compromise in a place where it seemed like it didn't matter. And all that built up to Daniel having character where it really did matter. Like, here's the thing. Your personal integrity might be the most important asset you bring with you to your workplace. It's also the thing that's lost the fastest when an obstacle leads you to compromise. And when your integrity is compromised, in sometimes small ways that people can't even see, it sets you in a trajectory to change your life and people around you in big ways. And every obstacle you encounter is a motivation to do something, and often it's the wrong thing. But God's way, I mean, this is different. And it starts small. It is to resolve to make up your mind ahead of time. What values will you not compromise? What lines will you not cross as a follower of Christ? And making a commitment to do what's right, even if it's a high-risk, low-reward situation like Daniel. I mean, think about it. People are like icebergs, and the part that people see might be the small part. The way you measure an iceberg, the way you measure a person is by what's going on below the sight line, right? The true weight of personal integrity is more about what people can't see. It's defined in places where most people can't even see. And decisions that most people don't discover. But that's where ethical decisions are made. The writer of Proverbs puts it, I mean, so powerfully. Above all else, this is Proverbs 4:23, guard your heart. Why do you guard your heart? For everything you do flows from it. Which is a really bold statement to make. Everything you do, Proverbs says, is a consequence of what your character is. Your thoughts, your internal self-talk, your subconscious habit-formed reactions to obstacles, your behavior is a product of who you are deep down. It's like, you know, we sang these lyrics. It was our third song. We sang, I am in the storm, but Lord, the storm is not in me. Which, I mean, if you sang that, it's such a powerful thing to like shake your fist in the air and go, I may be surrounded by obstacles, but that's not who I am. And the next line was, God, you will be my peace. I will wait here. That's what worship is at times. And when we trust in God, when we're able to look at the storms around us, the broken house that we might be in, and instead of that leading us to being destroyed, instead of obstacles leading us to small compromise, the storm can actually lead us to character. Your response to obstacles, I mean, the iceberg that not everybody could see, your stability, your base, do you know where that comes from? Well, it comes from worship. It comes from going, God, you are bigger than I am. Jesus, you're my friend, as we sang. I trust you no matter what I'm up against. And that is just one really profound way that your workplace, your Monday through Friday, is affected by your worship on Sunday. Imagine with me for a second. What might change about your week? What might it look like if your worship might change? So that the inevitable obstacles you run into, like I can't tell you if you're like really connected to God, you won't have bad times, but here's what I can tell you. Obeying God would look like, instead of obstacles leading you down compromise, you'd build character. What would it look like this week if your obstacles led you to build more character? I have no idea what sorts of decisions you'd have to make this week. We're all different. I don't know how many times you or I would go, oh man, this is tough. I'm not going to let myself think what I want to think. Like, I'm not going to let myself do what I want to do. I resolve not to compromise. I don't know what it'd look like, but it might look different. Let me challenge you with some words. This is a Pastor Mark Batterson. It hit me hard. He says that success is well-managed failure. This is failure is poorly managed success. In much less memorable words, it's saying that your obstacles can build character, which leads to success, or the very opposite could happen. Or think about this quote. This hit me hard too, because I got little kids who watch everything I do and say. He says, success is for those who know me best to respect me most. I'll say it again. Success is for those who know me best to respect me most. Success, of course, just like an ethical behavior. Do you know who knows you the best? Your spouse? Your kids, your parents, your caregiver, like people who are around you all the time, who see what you're worst, who see you when you don't think what you do matters. Do you know what you would have to do so that people who know you the best look at you and go, here's someone who has character and doesn't compromise? You know what you'd have to do? You'd have to resolve not to compromise when you hit obstacles. You'd have to live in God's power like Daniel, who resolved not to defile himself, not to compromise with the little things, because the little things matter. And the little battles that take place with the little obstacles can actually build the character muscle you need to weather the big stuff, the big storms. If you could do that, it might change just about everything. I'm convinced that this is God's way of using obstacles that you run into to help build character in the people that God loves the most, by people like us trusting God enough to obey God.